Leading Edge Medicine provides only general medical information. Since everyone's individual situation is unique, you should consult your own physician before taking any action related to your personal health. All content of this program is intended for general informational purposes only. Good morning and welcome to Leading Edge Medicine with Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat. Leading Edge Medicine is sponsored by Longevity Medical Clinics and is devoted to helping you feel and function better tomorrow than you do today by providing the newest and most advanced medical care designed to improve both your body and your brain. Leading Edge Medicine will keep you informed regarding the very latest developments in science and medicine while highlighting some of the Northwest's most prominent physicians. All while helping you separate the science from the silly and the facts from the fiction. This is live call-in radio at its very best, giving you the opportunity to participate in the show. Now, here are your hosts for Leading Edge Medicine, Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat, along with their co-host, Lynette Morgan.
We're so glad you've tuned in to Leading Edge Medicine. Of course, it's Memorial Day weekend. We just want to wish you all the best this weekend. We've actually recorded the show in advance. We hope you're enjoying it, and we'll be back live with you next week.
Well, good morning, all. This is Dr. Jerry Mixon, and with me this morning is the irrepressible... complete with bangles.
Yes. The fabulous, the one and... Hey, Jerry, come on.
All right, well, whatever.
Whatever. Come on.
The ever giggling, frequently
That's
dancing,
right.
Bangles jangling, Dr. the Samira Umat.
That's right.
All right. Well, this is Memorial Day, and Memorial Day is... a day that's important to me because I have too many young friends that I served with who never got the chance to grow up and grow old. And so I generally remember them. On one hand, it's a solemn day for me because I do have friends who I have to remember because I can't talk to them anymore. Aspects, it's a day of appreciation mm-hmm. and love for our country. And on the other hand, it's a day in which I consistently get sad and have my middle of the night ghosts come mm-hmm. and visit. So let me chat about that here for just a little bit.
For sure.
You know, unlike an awful lot of young people, I was born and raised on military bases. My mm-hmm. father was a career service member, and he was usually gone. He was deployed much of the time. But I didn't lack for male role models because when you're raised on a military base, you are surrounded by thousands of strong, tough, patriotic young men for whom duty, honor, and country have real meaning.
Right.
And so, you know, those role models formed my attitude towards the country, my attitudes towards the world in general, and our responsibilities in the world. And at the ripe old age of 17, a few months before I turned 18 years old, I took off and joined the Army, volunteered for the paratroopers, volunteered for the airborne infantry, volunteered for Vietnam, and volunteered while there for every high-risk group I could get myself into, and saw a fair bit of action. When I say I was a combat paratrooper, there was emphasis on the word combat.
Yeah.
And it's something that if you haven't been there, it's hard to understand, but let me explain something to most folks. They think of military as marching and parades and uniforms and flags flying and that sort of thing. What it really is a small group of men whose lives depend on each other. And every single day of our lives, we knew that the man on the right and the left of us would do his job, even if it required him losing his life in the process. Mm. When one of my team members told me that they would cover my right flank or my left flank or my six, I knew for certainty that no one was going to come at me from those directions as long as that man was alive.
Right.
And it was incumbent on me to give them the same honor and respect to ensure that while I was conscious or breathing, no one was going to come past me to harm them.
Mm.
No other time in your life are you going to have that kind of bond with another man.
Yeah.
Or even a spouse.
Mm-hmm.
It is, you know, rare that you will be called on a regular basis to put your life on the line for another human being.
Right.
Now, in my many years of business and medicine, I have friends and colleagues that I'm very close to, and I would ask them perhaps to risk some money on my judgment,
mm-hmm.
but seldom their lives.
Right.
And so that was a very different milieu in which we operated. And sometimes those friends did lose their lives. I've had several die on either side of me. And some of them did the ultimate utility, where I actually used their dead bodies as shelter mm-hmm. from shrapnel and incoming while I rested my rifle across their dead chest to kill the people coming at us. I guess as physicians go, I'm relatively unique in that it was the extreme violence of my youth that led me into medicine, because when I finished my military service, the Army told me that I was 90% permanently disabled for multiple gunshot and shrapnel wounds, and I had no skills.
Mm.
No skills except blowing things up and killing people, and there was precious little call for that in the average civilian job.
Mm.
So the only job I could find was at Long Beach Naval Shipyard back in 1960-something, and the ships weren't supposed to dump sewage in the harbor, but they did. So I got a 15-foot wooden rowboat, a 55-gallon drum, and a net. And I got to row around the harbor scooping up human poop and putting it in the barrel.
Mm.
Now, you've never lived till you spend a summer California day with half a barrel of poop.
Mm.
It causes one to examine your role in life and how you want to spend the rest of it. And I can guarantee you,
imagine.
I wanted to get out of that boat
right. Desperately. Yeah. Yep, indeed.
So the question is, you know, okay, I went out of the boat, but what am I going to do?
Right.
And I had suffered a fair bit of trauma, as you could expect from the little bit I've told you about that part of my life. One thing I knew absolutely was I wanted a job that would never entail harming another human being.
Mm.
You know, my unique skill set was one I never wanted to have to employ again. And the field that gave me the best promise of helping instead of harming was medicine.
Mm.
And so I determined, while rowing around the harbor scooping up poop, to become a physician. Now, I suspect very few doctors have made that decision under quite those circumstances.
I agree with you.
But I was highly motivated.
Yeah, indeed.
And so for 48, 49 years now, I have served as a physician, and I have made it my daily task to do as much good in the world as I possibly can while minimizing the risk of harming anyone.
Mm-hmm.
And so for me, Memorial Day is truly a day to remember young friends who never got a chance to grow old.
Yeah.
And to think about those young men when I see a Memorial Day parade, or I'm at an airport and I see a young soldier in uniform
mm-hmm.
Going, you know, from one base to another. I get a very special feeling of fondness and concern
sure.
for that young person.
Yeah.
Because I know what they've signed up for. And I hope to God that they will never be called on to sacrifice themselves for their country. But I know that these are young people that are quite literally willing to put their life on the line for those of us who can't or who won't.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm old and white-haired and got my share of wrinkles and clearly am no longer fit to be a combat soldier. In fact, I got kicked out because I was no longer fit to be a combat soldier physically. Although it is always been a point of pride to me that when I was told that I was 90% disabled and was supposed to go upstairs and process out of service, being young and dumb and not quite recognizing the realities of the world, I tried to argue with the major, and I I told him, you know, sir, I realize I'm not fit for combat right now, but there are things I can do for the team, and I don't believe I'm 90% disabled. I think, personally, it's more like 10%, and I ought to be able to go back to duty.
Mm.
The major looked at me, laughed, smiled, and said, son, you're held together with scar tissue and stubbornness. Get the F-bomb out of here and make something of yourself. So, I like to think that in my nearly 50 years as a physician, I have thoroughly obeyed the last lawful order that I was ever given.
That's right. Make something of yourself.
I did get out of there.
Right.
And I did make something of myself. Yeah. I hope that it has been a benefit to the world and, you know, to those around me.
Yeah. No, absolutely. So. tough words. But, you know, when that is the only life you know, sometimes you wonder, what am I going to do? And there's always this fear. You are stuck in fear because you don't know what will you do, because you grew up on bases, you served on bases, and then now they're saying to you, leave.
Yeah, leave, go.
Yeah.
And I'm saying, and do what?
But, yeah.
Scoop poop? No.
Well, no, but you figured it out. And you know, desperate times call for desperate measures, like the song says. And when your back is against the wall, that's when people really know that there's no other way. They have to move forward.
You rise or you fall.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And I was fortunate that I, you know, I have managed. I've fumbled my way through life at times. I've got to admit,
we all do.
I am not a perfect human being. I have not always lived a life that many people would approve of.
We'll leave it at that.
That's right. Oh, dear, yes.
But it's been a fun journey, right, Jerry?
Oh, my God, it's been a wonderful journey. And, you know, when I finally finish up my time in mortality, I have to admit, it has been one heck of a ride. I have lived most men's wilder fantasies. I have done things that most people dream about. You know, I've been poor. I'm now quite affluent.
Yeah.
You know, I have loved and been loved by... by many, hated by a few.
Okay.
That's okay. Hey, listen.
Hey, yeah.
I firmly believe you should be judged not just by the quality of your friends,
absolutely,
but also by the quality of your enemies.
Yeah. You yes, know? Indeed.
There are some people I don't want to be loved by.
Yeah, for sure.
So anyway, here we are running Longevity Medical Clinic and Bellamedica and Relief Factor.
That's right. You are. Yeah.
You know, married to the love of my life with a wonderful little 12-year-old daughter who was born when I was 65 years old, which gives you some minor insight into the somewhat unusual life I've lived.
Yeah. Indeed. Well, here's to Memorial Day 2024, and to the best to everybody who's listening, to those that are no more with us. They still, you know, are part of the journey, and they help in mold people that are left behind.
Yes. But here is my one really downside of Memorial Day, and that is Memorial Day, Veterans Day, 4th of July, about three times a year, my ghosts come back to haunt me. Mm. And the ghosts are never the men that I killed. Mm. The ghosts are the families of the men I killed. It's the mothers, the fathers, who say, why did my son have to die?
Yeah.
It's the wives who are left without a husband. It's the children who did not have a father to raise them. And in my nightmares, I try to explain to them that it was his job to kill me and my job to kill him. And it wasn't personal. It was business. Somehow they never accept that explanation because for the men who fight, for those who die, for the families who lose people they love, it's never business. Mm. And the fact that it's war does not soothe anyone's heart. It's personal.
Yeah.
It's about as personal as you get.
Yeah.
And so for those of you that have not had a chance to serve, hug a soldier.
Yeah.
Donate, be kind, be understanding. And for those soldiers who did not recover as well as I have, whose lives have been disrupted in horrible ways by the things they experienced, offer them consolation, offer them support.
Yeah.
Do what you can for them, because not everyone is as fortunate and blessed as I have been to come from that to this.
Right.
Now, the rest of the show, we're going to try to move on to somewhat more cheerful and less weighty aspects. Thank you for listening thus far, folks.
We're so glad you're here on this Memorial Day weekend. Thank you for tuning in. Just a reminder, we're recorded this week, but we'll be live again next weekend.
Right. So next, I'd like to talk a little bit about Longevity Medical Clinic and why we do what we do, how we do what we do, and why, even though you think you're doing just fine, you might find it advantageous to come and let us evaluate you a bit.
Right, right.
Longevity Medical Clinic is a unique place in that we treat the normal but undesired changes of aging. Now, people sometimes wonder why insurance doesn't cover what we do, and I'll tell you quite frankly, insurance covers disease treatment, not longevity. If you get sick, your insurance is helped to cover the doctor intervening to make you better, to help you recover from your illness or your injury.
So it's reaction-based. It's a reactive form of medicine.
That's right. We don't actually have a health care system in America. We have a disease management system. And our whole system is set up on the presumption that you're going to get sick at some point and you're going to need people to help you get well. And that is what our whole system is designed for. And the insurance-driven medical care system is based on, well, the insurance model. And the insurance model is just this. Let's say when you buy home insurance, your home insurance is not there to repaint your walls or to polish your floors or to get rid of the crayon marks or to build you a white picket fence around the yard or to dig the weeds out of your lawn or to plant a pretty garden.
Right.
Your homeowner's insurance is there that if the house burns or a tree falls on the roof, you have a disaster, and it's there to help cover those expenses. Well, if you carry that analogy over to healthcare, your medical insurance is not there to make you healthier. It is there to treat you when you get sick. It doesn't. It's not there to make you stronger, faster, leaner, smarter, sexier, and happier.
Right.
Those things come under the heading of health maintenance. That's your job is to maintain your mind and body. Your health insurance's job is to pay for the consequences when you don't maintain your mind and body and you have a crisis of some sort.
Right.
Now, you can argue that they ought to cover keeping you healthy because it would save them money in the long run.
Yes.
And you're right. It probably would.
Absolutely right. Yes.
But that's not the way the system is set up.
Right.
So we have to deal with the world as it is, not the world as we wish it were.
Right.
So 27 or so years ago, I opened Longevity Medical Clinic with a goal to not be a traditional medical clinic, but in some respects to be the ultimate preventive medicine facility.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Our job is to keep you from getting sick.
Right.
Our job is to make you as strong and fast and lean and smart and sexy and healthy and happy as it's humanly possible to be at any given point in your life.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the normal trajectory with aging is to get slower, fatter, weaker, dumber, sexless, and miserable.
Hmm. Well, but that's true, right? I mean, nobody enjoys the vigor of youth as they get decades older.
Yes.
But it happens ever so slowly that we accommodate to that and we think of it as our new norm.
Right.
Well, Grandpa was like that, so I'm going to be like that, right?
Yeah. Right. My father was overweight. My mother was overweight. My aunts and uncles were overweight. So I'm overweight. I don't have a choice.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. The problem with being overweight, of course, is that fat is not a cosmetic issue. It is a very serious metabolic dysfunction because fat cells are very active chemical factories. They're actually producing an enormous number of hormones, peptides, enzymes, immune factors that are getting dumped into your bloodstream and cause damage in your entire brain and body.
Mm.
Being overweight puts you at increased risk of dementia, heart attacks, strokes, osteoporosis. Your bones thin out in part because you're heavy, which is really kind of interesting. Your blood vessels start plugging up. You can't supply them any part of your body with blood as well. And so you start developing kidney dysfunction, and you can't breathe as well, and you can't run anymore.
Yeah.
And that inflammation is causing all sorts of diseases, up to and including diabetes, strokes, heart attacks, etc., and cancer.
Yep.
You know, most folks don't realize that being overweight raises your risk of virtually every cancer known to humanity.
Yeah, the statistics are similar to diabetes. We all recognize that diabetic patients are more prone to cancer, and realistically speaking, obesity does the same thing.
Well, obesity leads to the diabetes to start with most of the time. There are some people that are genetically predisposed to diabetes, even if they're thin, but there are not a lot of them, at least not in our country. Some Asians, Han Chinese, and some Indians, actually, are prone to diabetes even if they stay fairly lean.
Mm.
But if they get heavy, we can guarantee they're going to become diabetics.
Right, right.
So we set about making the changes that everyone should be able to make. But we give your body back the tools that it lost. Now, when we talk about hormone balancing, we aren't talking about just testosterone for men or estrogen for women. In fact, a fact that most people, even most physicians, don't seem to really recognize very clearly is that estrogen is not a woman's primary hormone. Women have more estrogen than men, and so they are impacted by estrogen more than we are. But the primary hormone in women is testosterone, just like it is in men.
Mm.
Now, there are order of magnitude lower in levels. Men have a lot more hormones, period, than women do. I always laugh when I hear some guy refer to a woman in his life as
hormonal.
Being hormonal. And I had to say, no, guy, you're the hormonal one. You know? It's just that our hormonal cycle shifts twice a day, not once a month.
Yeah.
And we men peak our testosterone when we're young, when we're 18 or 20 years old. Our total testosterone runs in the range of 1,000 to 1,200 nanograms per deciliter, and a young woman runs at about 75 or 80 nanograms per deciliter. So, you know, 1,000 to 1,200 versus 75 or 80,
we are
a lot more hormone than they are. Men and women both make estrogens, but a woman's estrogen peaks when she is at her hormonal peak at about 35. Ours peaks at about 3.5. Okay. So they've got 10 times more estrogen than we've got. We've got 10 times more testosterone than they've got. But when you look at total numbers, you add, you know, her 75 or 80 of testosterone to her 35 or so of estrogen, and she's running up there about 110 to 120. You take our 1,200 of testosterone and throw another 3.5 of estrogen on top of it. Well, guess what? We are far and away the more hormonal.
Yeah, that's a nice way of putting it. Yeah. I think men don't recognize that or know it. Yeah.
No. Now, they recognize it twice a day when their testosterone load peaks. They wake up every morning as a young man desperate for sex. And that is our sunrise testosterone peak.
Yeah.
Sun comes up and so do we.
Yeah.
It's just the way it works. Then our levels moderate through much of the day so that we can work with other males and not kill each other over females.
That's a good thing.
That's a good thing. Although there are females who would like to see men fight over them.
Okay. I'm sure there are.
But nevertheless, yeah, that's why there is polygamy and not polyandry. Mm. You know, men kill each other over women.
Mm.
It is rare for women to kill each other over men.
Mm.
You know, if one man's got two women, they find a way to cooperate.
Yeah.
Usually it involves divorce.
Out of money.
But they do find a way to cooperate.
Yeah.
Men get downright aggressive and violent over women. And that is because we are saturated with our androgens. We do okay during the day, and then sundown comes. Mm-hmm. And in a traditional marriage, the woman will be trying to clear the dishes or standing at the sink trying to clean up the mess, and young hubby is standing behind groping her because all he's thinking about is sex again, because now the sun is going down.
Mm.
And he's getting his evening surge.
Right.
So we are driven, we guys are driven by our hormones twice a day. Women cycle once a month.
Yeah.
And so that menstruation, when they're preparing their uterus for pregnancy again, because they didn't get pregnant this month, so their body is getting ready to try again for next month, we see that cycle. That's obvious. And their vaginal bleeding makes it inconvenient for us to have sex. And so we notice it a lot.
Yeah.
All right. We men are very straightforward creatures.
Yeah, indeed.
So,
it's actually so much easier to balance a man's hormones than it is a woman's hormones.
It is. You just load in a whole bunch of it.
Yes.
No. You can take the average older man, kick his hormones back up to where they're at 25, and in 2 weeks he'll be swaggering down the street saying, me and Rambo, we're manly men.
That's right. You know? That's right. But Jerry, you know, even just the hormone replacement themselves, remember when you started the clinics way back 27 years ago, the big thing was hormone replacement therapy to give the normal physiology. But in
that
those
was our
days,
cutting edge in those days.
But we didn't really even then understand the full impact of what we were doing because over time now we're realizing, wait a minute, that actually helps with heart health. It helps with cognitive health. It helps with muscle mass. It helps with bone health.
Yes.
And then when we keep adding new stuff on that, it really helps change the trajectory of where that person could have been had they not started at that time.
That's right.
And what we're recognizing more and more now is that the sooner we start, the better off they'll be. Like, there was a study published about brain health, and when they said that if you're starting to see cognitive decline and you replace the nutrients and hormones that are depleted, you'll see an improvement.
Mm-hmm.
But if you stop using those nutrients and then you start noticing a decline again, those same nutrients may not have the same impact that they did initially.
That's right, because there's a difference in nutrition and hormone balancing.
Yeah.
And you need them both.
Right.
You need the nutrition, but you also need the neurotransmitters and the hormones in your brain. Testosterone is a chemical that helps our brains function with spatial orientation. It's why young men are very good at knowing where they are in the world.
Yeah.
They don't need a map and they don't need to ask for directions because they know which way is north and south.
Yeah, they're always wrong too. Yeah.
You know, I mean, my wife says, how do you get there? I say, well, you head north about 2 miles and turn east. And she says, good. Which way is north?
That's right. She's like me. Like, okay, where?
Yeah. And, you know, I could no more lose track of north than I could right or left.
Yeah.
But yeah, we are made as very different creatures.
Right.
People that think in men and women are just defined by our social roles are wrong.
Yeah.
We are radically different creatures.
Right.
And so we, you know, we need to recognize that fact, but we need to play to our strengths.
Yeah.
And we need to ameliorate our weaknesses.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But, you know, you were absolutely spot on when you were saying we need to start early.
Yeah.
Boy, we're almost done with this segment, but let me see if I can at least get a start on this. Breast cancer is a big concern. We see people marching. They have the pink ribbons. They have all sorts of stuff. We see people saying, you know, go get your mammograms. We need, you know, early detection, et cetera. The problem is mammograms don't prevent breast cancer.
That's
they
right.
help us find it a bit earlier.
Yeah.
Okay. And much of the increased lifespan that we've got in breast cancer comes from earlier diagnosis.
Mm-hmm.
If you diagnose it 3 years earlier, you're going to get 3 years extra life that you know about that they've had breast cancer, but even if you didn't improve the length of their life.
Right.
But it turns out that if we start intervening with your hormone balancing in your 30s, we can probably come close to abolishing breast cancer. Now, I know that's a bit of a dramatic statement, but I'm going to stick with it. When we come back after this break, I want to talk about what we can do with young women in their 30s to make sure they don't get breast cancer in their 50s, 60s, and 70s.
Sounds good.
Just a reminder, happy Memorial Day weekend from all of us at Leading Edge Medicine.
Okay, we left off. I teased you a little bit about...
Yes, you did. My gosh. Eradicating breast cancer with early hormone replacement therapy?
Isn't that kind of a fascinating thought?
Yes.
All right. Okay, well, let's take a look at when and how breast cancer develops. Okay. First of all, women in their 20s almost never get breast cancer. About the only 20-year-olds that are going to have breast cancer are those that have a genetic abnormality,
yes. Mm-hmm.
The BRCA1, BRCA2 genes.
BRCA genes.
These are specific genetic defects. And if you're born with it, you've got a 99% chance of getting breast and or ovarian cancer at some point in your life.
Right.
And that's why people that have this often have double mastectomies because they know.
Right.
It's almost 100% chance of breast cancer for them, and their risk starts in their late teens and early 20s.
Yeah.
But the normal breast cancer, if there is such a thing as a normal breast cancer, but the other 99% of breast cancer in this world doesn't happen to 20-year-olds or 30-year-olds. We start to see a little bit of breast cancer in the late 30s to early 40s, and as the hormone levels decline, breast cancer risk climbs. And the lower your hormone levels are, the higher your risk of breast cancer.
Mm.
And those, as the hormones go down and the breast cancer goes up, and that dichotomy continues until you finally lose all of your estrogen about 75 years old. And at 75, you are at your peak risk of breast cancer.
Mm.
The incidence per woman is absolute highest then, but it stops going up. When hormones can't go down anymore, breast cancer stops getting more common.
Mm.
It plateaus from that point on. Now, interestingly, if we can give a woman back her estrogens when within 10 years of menopause.
Menopause, yeah.
Okay. Now, at menopause, you still have estrogen. In fact, you've only lost about 50% of your estrogen at menopause. The reason your period stopped was not lack of estrogen. It was lack of progesterone.
Right.
Your progesterone's down about 75% at age 50. Your estrogen's down about 50%. Your big killer is your testosterone, which is now down about 85%. Mm. And so all three of those hormones are on their decline, and that's when we start seeing a big rise in breast cancer. Mm-hmm. If we give women back their estrogen in their 50s, we will reduce their risk of breast cancer for the rest of their life for about 30%.
By 30%. That's a huge number. 30% less breast cancer if hormone replacement therapy with estrogen is initiated within 10 years of menopause.
That's right. So when your estrogen is down 50 to 60%,
yeah,
giving it back to you will cut your risk of breast cancer by about a third.
Yeah.
Okay. But guess what? If instead of giving you your estrogen in your 50s, we give you testosterone,
yeah,
because that's the one that's the lowest. That's the one that has dropped by 85%. If we raise your testosterone back up to where it used to be, we cut your risk of breast cancer by about 80 to 85%, not 30%. Mm. 80 to 85% risk reduction of breast cancer in women who will go on testosterone and stay on it. Mm-hmm. In their mid-50s.
But this is new information, Jerry. We need to tell everybody that this was not known 5 years ago. This is new information.
It's true. Your doctor who graduated from medical school 5 years ago has never been told this.
Yeah.
So don't blame him for not knowing it.
Yeah. Okay?
This is stuff that I get to find in the literature because guess what? I don't see patients. I just read literature all the time. That gives people the illusion that I'm smart. I'm not smart. I just read a lot. Okay, there's the difference. But here's where it gets really interesting. We now know that breast cancer doesn't generally grow very fast. In fact, it starts as one cell. And that cell doubles anywhere from 30 days to 90 days. And then you've got two breast cancer cells. 30 to 90 days later, you got four breast cancer cells, okay? 30 to 90 days after that, you've got eight breast cancer cells. You've got to get millions and millions of breast cancer cells. You need a lump of breast cancer about a centimeter to a centimeter and a half in diameter before we're going to find it on your mammogram or on your physical exam. So what it says is, depending on how fast your breast cancer is growing, by the time we make your diagnosis, you've actually had that cancer for 3 to 10 years. Mm-hmm. Now, the average is about 5 years. Mm-hmm. So most of the time, by the time a woman is diagnosed with breast cancer, she's actually already had that tumor for an average of 5 years. Mm. Fast-growing tumors, 3 years. Slow-growing tumors, 10.
Yeah.
Most around 5. So here's the really interesting thing. When we look at the studies in which thousands and thousands of women were given testosterone in their mid-50s, and we look at they didn't have breast cancer when we started the testosterone, and we start looking at when did we find a breast cancer in these women, 90%+ of the breast cancers we find in these women we will find in the first 4.5 years after they start the testosterone. Mm. That doesn't mean the testosterone gave it to them. What it means is they already had the tumor before they started the testosterone. And if anything, the testosterone we now know slows the growth of breast cancer. Mm. In fact, high-dose testosterone makes many breast cancers shrivel up and get smaller, start going away. But what we have discovered is that cancer almost never starts as a full-blown malignancy. What will usually happen is you get some cells. Something bad is happening to stress those cells, and the cells become less normal. We call that dysplasia or atypia. And the atypia then progresses over time, and they become dysplastic. And then the dysplasia gets worse and worse and worse until at some point the abnormalities in that cell cross the line from abnormal to malignant. They now are a cancer. And it can take years to go from mild atypia to a malignancy. And that's part of why there's that long delay. So we know that when we look at women in their 50s and we start giving them testosterone, if we'll follow those women for 10 years, we reduce their total cancer risk by 85%. Mm-hmm. So if 100 women were going to get it, only 15 will get it if they've been on testosterone for the full 10 years. Mm-hmm. That's pretty amazing.
That is, yeah.
And those women who are going to be diagnosed are going to be diagnosed in the first few years, most of them in the first 3 years or so, indicating that they already had the cancer before they started the therapy. We just didn't know it yet because it was too small for us to find. But then comes the really interesting question. How long did they have dysplasia? How long were they developing abnormal but not cancerous cells in their breast before it became a cancer? Mm. Now, when we look at other cancers that we can draw parallels with, cervical cancer, for instance, you start with mild dysplasia of the cervix, and then it gets worse and worse and worse, and finally it becomes a cervical cancer.
Right.
Usually over a period of 3 to 5 years.
Yeah.
You get skin cancers. You don't normally start right out with a skin cancer. You start out with a rough spot.
Yeah.
Some abnormal cells that are nowhere near cancer, and then they get rougher and rougher. They start turning red. They start changing colors. They start growing. Again, your skin cancer develops over many, many years.
Yeah.
Well, breast cancer is most likely the very same. It's just that we have not had a way of looking for dysplastic or atypical cells in the breast until they become not only a cancer, but have been a cancer long enough to grow big enough we can find
it. Exactly, yeah.
If I had my druthers, now that we know that testosterone and estrogen both slow the growth of the formation of breast cancer by an enormous amount, I would love to be able to, as soon as a woman's hormones started declining in their 30s, we were able to touch them lightly and bring them back up to their ideal range.
Yeah.
And as they aged and their natural production declined, we'd raise their level.
Mm-hmm.
Until when they got to the 50s, they'd have probably been on hormones for the last 20 years.
Yeah.
And never allowed them to develop those abnormal cells that became atypical and then finally became dysplastic and then finally became a cancer.
Mm.
You know, there's a very good reason for suspecting, for believing that if we were able to intervene with women to replace all of their hormones as they started to decline in their 30s and we maintain them thereon, we might effectively get rid of breast cancer.
Wow.
In women.
Well, that's pretty phenomenal because not only is that a dangerous diagnosis, it impacts not just on quality of life, but mortality. So, you know, it is something that then people worry about in generations, subsequent generations to come. And so if we can change the trajectory of one person, it'll impact on a lot of other people, not just financially and emotionally, but in many other ways.
Yes.
Yeah.
But the only place I know that actually looks at women when they're young, if they come in to get evaluated, we pick up their dropping hormone levels long before menopause.
Yes.
And we're able to intervene even in their 30s and 40s.
Yeah.
You know, my wife is a prime example.
Yeah.
You know, she's been on hormone therapy since she was in her 30s.
Yeah, but a lot of times, you know, there's many reasons. First of all, insurance won't cover for any of it.
Yes.
People will know that there's a declination, but they don't put the symptoms together as this is the cause.
Mm-hmm.
We also recognize that perimenopause is not just a single smooth decline. It's very up and down. It's like a sawtooth. It's up and down constantly. And the other big thing is, well, so what? This is normal. It is natural. And so nobody wants to do anything about it. They,
sure.
in fact, decline testing for estrogen levels because they say, well, what is it going to show?
Yes.
We know it's down.
Yeah, we know it's going down. Well,
yeah.
What that tells us is here is our new baseline.
Yeah.
Let's bring it back up to where it was when she was 25 years old.
Right.
That's really
right.
what we
but
should be doing.
But not many people do that.
No, almost nobody
does.
And that is
why
Longevity Medical Clinic is unique.
Right.
You know, when we get one of those forward-thinking men or women in their 30s.
Yeah.
That really want to be their best for as long as they can be. We love it.
Right. I mean, remember when we were, I remember doing the radio show and we started saying that we can reverse diabetes, and then Dr. Mark Hyman and so many others started talking about it and it became more common. But there was a time when we could never say you can reverse diabetes because it was like once you got the diagnosis, it was with you for the rest of your life.
Yes.
Yet we have patients who were diabetics who are no longer diabetics.
And we've had them for 20-some years.
Yeah.
We have been reversing diabetes for over 20 years,
yeah.
And preventing diabetes, of course, longer than that. But yes, when we first started telling people we could reverse diabetes, there was a bit of an outrage among some of our colleagues. They were upset. Mm-hmm. And then when they found out that, yes, indeed, these people with high blood sugars that used to be on medicines are no longer on medicines, they still wouldn't say that their diabetes had been cured.
It's in remission.
They said, oh, well, you've just put them in remission. They'll get it again later.
Yeah. You know? Right. Right.
And that's I kind of laughed at that because that was that's like if somebody falls and breaks their arm. And you put in a cast, and the arm heals. Do I diagnose them as a broken arm in remission for the rest of their life? No, they had a broken arm. Now it works fine.
That's right.
You know, if you had diabetes and we fix it so you no longer need medicines and you now have perfectly normal blood sugars, your diabetes has been cured.
Yeah.
Yes, it's true. If you return to the lifestyle that gave you diabetes before, you can get it again.
Sure.
You know, having been cured of diabetes once is like being cured of pneumonia. You know, you are not immune to pneumonia for the rest of your life. You can get it again.
That's right. No, that is so true. And it's very difficult to explain that. Even some of our patients sometimes don't understand the concepts. But because they're feeling so much better than when they came in, they kind of continue with the program and go, I think you know what you're talking about. Let me trust you to do this for me.
That's right. Well, I see another segment has just about disappeared. So what do you say we go to a few phone calls?
Sounds like a plan.
Catch up, and then we'll come back with a few more little tidbits.
Sounds good.
We're so glad you've tuned in to Leading Edge Medicine. Of course, it's Memorial Day weekend. We just want to wish you all the best this weekend. We've actually recorded the show in advance. We hope you're enjoying it, and we'll be back live with you next week. Medicine, and Dan, you had just one more minute. Ish.
One more minute. I had a 16.8 average sugar, and 383 was my highest in 3 months.
Wow.
Now I'm at 6.2 average, and my blood sugar is about 116.
Okay.
So these people really did good for me, like you guys do for other people. And I just wanted to know, let you know how wonderful it is to have some people on you on the radio like you guys that think about people's care.
Well, you know,
God bless.
Well, thank you.
Thank you, Dan.
And yes, we do care.
Yep.
And of course, that is part of why our doctors spend an hour with each and every visit.
That's right.
We don't believe in 5-minute visits. That's just silly. You cannot handle complex physiologic problems in a matter of minutes. Mm-hmm. You need time to get to know the patient, to understand where their concerns are, to find out, you know, what's really going on. So, and there's just the decency. Human beings need to be listened to,
mm-hmm.
which is why sometimes people tell me that I let folks rattle on a little too long, but I'd rather, you know, let them over-rattle than under-rattle.
There you go.
Thank you, and God bless you guys.
All right. You guys, take care, Dan.
Thank you for that,
bye-bye.
Dan.
Good luck, Dan.
You know, but Dan finally got on the right equipment, which is a continuous glucose monitor.
Mm-hmm.
The sad part is he had to look it up and take it to the doctors and say, here's what I want.
Well, you know, and it's always sometimes frustrating because so many people that technically through insurance do not qualify for it, but would benefit so much from having that equipment.
Yes.
Because it would save the healthcare cost dollars too.
Yep.
If they did something, you know, by themselves rather than
yes.
become diabetic and then come in with complications.
You
later
give the patient
on.
A $200 yeah. piece of equipment. It lets them monitor things efficiently. And it saves them a $50,000 hospital
exactly.
bill.
Yeah. I mean, it's wow. so frustrating.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Wow.
Anyway, I'm glad that he's recovered. Poor guy seems to have had a traumatic journey.
Yes.
And that he's actually now on the road to recovery. He
and I'm glad he's now with physicians that will take the time to listen to him.
Yes.
Yeah, he's persevered.
He's getting healthy.
Yeah.
Yep. Very good.
All right. Who do we have next in line?
We're headed to Seattle. We have Ellie on the line. Good morning, Ellie.
Hello, Ellie.
Good morning. My question's kind of small, but
okay.
or short anyway. I'm just sort of starting to go on a probiotic, you know, and I just kind of wanted to do – I don't want to take a whole bunch of stuff I don't need. I just want to start out slow. And I wondered if you could give some – suggestions on maybe the specific type of strain that would be the thing as a female, and I'm 70, would be something that I would want to watch for.
Yeah. There aren't really a single strain. Remember, your gut microbiome has billions and billions of bacteria with many different kinds. And the restriction in a probiotic capsule is that they can't put in that many strains. So you
right.
want one that has many billions of colonies. So not just 4 or 5, but like 50 or 100 billion colonies. And you want as much variety as they can possibly put in there.
And the other thing is frequently these the ones that are dried on the shelf are losing potency the longer they sit there.
Mm.
And, you know, they may have been manufactured and then they go to the warehouse where who knows how long they sat in the warehouse and what the temperatures were in the warehouse. Then they get in a truck, they get shipped out to the store. They sit in the store for who knows how long before you buy them. So they do have some that are basically refrigerated from day one. And they are kept refrigerated and even in the store. They're not out on the shelf. They are in a refrigerated cabinet for you to take. This is what we do at our clinic.
That's right.
Is we have
you do refrigerated. And do
yes.
you suggest fermented type
Well, that's foods that you want to eat in your diet.
Right.
Fermented foods definitely are better for the gut microbiome.
And fermented foods not only have the metabolic products from the bacteria that fermented the food, you sometimes get some crossover from those bacteria that did the fermentation may still be alive in the fermented food, as long as
and
you're
you
not cooking
get,
it.
And you can get some of the fermented food in just things like, you know, dill pickles and pickled
kimchi,
asparagus
if you like
and things
it.
Like that. But
sauerkraut, you know, so many other people. The kimchi, definitely.
Does kefir have
yes.
probiotics?
Yes,
yes it
many
does.
Of them do.
Yeah,
now,
it does.
Some kefirs are pasteurized, in which most of the bacteria are killed. But there
so
are
you would
kefirs,
want unpasteurized.
Yeah,
okay.
Right. So you want a kefir that is, still has live culture in it.
Mm.
Okay, and then my last question, which is short also, is fish oil or krill? What if I'm starting to take that as supplement, you know, with omegas, do you, I mean, I hear things back and forth and, you know, it's hard to Google.
I generally stick with the fish oil, and the reason is simply the volume of oil is much larger. The krill oils have very little oil. That's why they're in little tiny, tiny capsules.
I like the little tiny capsules.
Most people do,
But the volume of oil you're putting in your body is low. And one of the problems with many women especially is they're not getting enough omega-3 oils in their diet. They're getting mostly omega-6s. And so they get dry skin with flaking and so on. And upping your dose of omega-3s is one of the best cures for that.